Greetings, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. My guest tonight is Robert Schwartz, author of Courageous Souls. Courageous Souls is the story of 10 individuals who planned before birth to experience great challenges. Working closely with several mediums and channels, Robert spent 3 years studying the pre-birth plans of dozens of individuals. He learned that the events in their lives were neither random nor arbitrary, but rather part of a wisely conceived and intricate plan, a plan they themselves had bravely designed. The result is a group of riveting stories in which we are allowed to peek into others' Akashic records, speak with their higher selves, and with the soul that made the plans. So let's find out more about this wonderful book from Robert directly. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm well, Lance. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, when I first heard about your book on the internet, I was very, very excited about it, and I downloaded your free PDF file, and it was absolutely amazing stuff.
Thank you.
It mapped over everything I felt all along and have told people, except I've never seen it in writing. So you have done something really monumental, I think.
Thank you.
Maybe if we could start by having you share with the listeners how the book came about.
Well, Lance, let me first mention the full title of the book is Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth?
Right.
And this came about, it all started in 2003. At that time, I was living in Chicago and working as a self-employed marketing and communications consultant. And I felt tremendously unfulfilled by the work that I was doing. I felt that there must be a higher calling or a higher purpose to my life, but I had no idea what the higher purpose might be. And in my efforts to figure that out, I went to see a psychic medium, which I had never done before. In fact, I'd never even known anyone who had done that. Now, in the session with the medium, she introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, highly evolved consciousnesses, non-physical consciousnesses, with whom we plan our lives and who then guide us through those lives after we incarnate. And through the medium, I was able to talk to my guides. Well, we had a very far-ranging conversation, but one of the things they introduced me to in this conversation was the concept of pre-birth planning. They said, you planned many of your greatest challenges before you were born. And of course, I said, well, why in the world did I want to do that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. So we went on to talk about some of my challenges and why I had planned them. And I was absolutely astonished by this information. You know, at the time that these challenging things had happened to me, they had seemed to be empty, purposeless suffering. And because I saw no deeper meaning in these events, the suffering was greater than it needed to be.
Yeah.
But after my guides explained to me that these things had been planned, then I saw new and deeper meaning in them. And I realized I was onto something that I should share with other people, because so often when something, quote-unquote, bad happens to us, we don't see a deeper purpose. And if we did, we could go about learning the lessons in a much more conscious manner. So I resolved to write a book about this. And the first thing that happened after that was that I was introduced to a woman who has the ability to channel her soul, her higher self. So I told her about this book that I wanted to write, and I said, could I interview your soul? And she said, yes. So we had 5 interview sessions for a total of about 15 hours, and it was absolutely fascinating, and it formed the foundation of knowledge that went on to become Courageous Souls. In these interviews, I was able to ask her soul directly, what did you plan for her life, and why did you plan it? And her soul told me in great detail about the challenges that had been discussed and why certain challenges had been selected and others had not. So with this as the foundation, I then went on to spend months obsessively reading spirituality books and metaphysics books. And at the same time, I was coming into contact with several mediums and channels who, not coincidentally, had the exact collection of abilities that I would need to go on to write this book. So one of them, for example, is very skilled at talking with the quote-unquote deceased. And if I was interviewing somebody about a particular life challenge that involved that person who was now back in spirit, we could work with this medium to talk to that person and say, what did you plan and why did you plan it? And then I worked with another woman who is a trans channel, generally channeling angelic consciousnesses. And through her, we were again able to ask, in this case, angels, what did this person plan and why? One of the other mediums actually has the ability to channel someone's higher self.
Wow.
So once again, I had the opportunity to interview souls directly and ask them about the pre-birth plan. And then perhaps the most remarkable ability of all, one of the mediums has the ability to see and hear our pre-birth planning sessions. In other words, she could see souls talking to each other about the upcoming lifetime, talking about the challenges that they were planning to experience together. And so through her, I was able to obtain the actual dialogues that people had word for word with their future parents, children, spouses, friends, and other loved ones when in spirit they were planning their lives together.
Wow. Wow, that is really awesome. I know just from reading some of the accounts of these things that they're absolutely riveting, and it makes complete sense when you're reading it. And the flow of the dialogue is very, very well written. What were some of the difficulties that people choose to grow from, and why do we have these difficulties? Why do we create them in the first place?
Well, the book is organized by type of life challenge. Each chapter focuses on a particular challenge, and I tried to choose things that are very common so that the book would be as helpful to as many people as possible. So there's a chapter on the pre-birth planning of physical illness, and there are two stories in there, a gentleman who actually planned to experience AIDS and a woman who planned to experience breast cancer. Then there's a chapter on the parenting of handicapped children, and it tells the story of Jennifer, who has two autistic sons, and the three of them planned the son's autism before any of them were born. There's a chapter on deafness and blindness, a chapter on drug addiction and alcoholism, a chapter on losing a loved one, and a chapter on physical accidents. So you asked, why do we plan these sorts of things?
Yeah.
Well, there are a number of reasons. One, which I think will probably be familiar to many of your listeners, is balancing karma.
Okay.
Karma is sometimes conceptualized as cosmic debt, but I think of it more as unbalanced energy. And just to take a very simple example, let's say that in a previous lifetime, one person was physically ill and another person was the caretaker. When they pass back into spirit and they review their lives, they will have a sense of unbalanced energy and be motivated to balance it in the next incarnation. So the easiest way to do that would be to switch roles. The person who was the caretaker may plan to experience physical illness. The person who was physically ill may now plan to be the caretaker. But what makes it so interesting and so challenging is that once they're in body, neither person is going to remember the pre-birth plan. So the person who is now physically ill may feel burdened by or angry about the illness, and the person who's in the caretaker role may feel angry about or burdened by the need to care for another person. But this balancing of karma is one of the major reasons why we plan challenges into our lives. Now, another reason is for healing, and I'll take an example from the book. In the chapter on deafness and blindness, I tell the story of Penelope, who is a young African-American woman in her 20s. She was born completely deaf. And when we worked with medium Stacy Wells, the medium who was able to hear and see the pre-birth planning sessions, we saw in her session that in her past lifetime, the one immediately prior to this one, Penelope had the same mother that she has in this lifetime. And the mother was shot to death in that past lifetime by the mother's boyfriend. Penelope was a small child when the murder occurred, and she didn't actually see her mother murdered, but she was within hearing range, and she heard the gunshots that killed her mother. Well, as you can imagine, she was quite traumatized by this, and in that lifetime, she actually went on to commit suicide. So when we go into her pre-birth planning session, her spirit guide says to her, "My dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no such trauma will occur again in the upcoming lifetime?" And you will be able to work on your healing on a subconscious level. And Penelope replies, "Yes, that is what I want, and that is what I wish to do." So she plans deafness so that this won't happen again, and she can complete the healing, you know, from the trauma in the past lifetime on a subconscious level. So healing would be a second reason for planning life challenges. A third reason that I found in my research for courageous souls is to be of service to others. And a good example of that is John Elmore, the gentleman in the chapter on physical illness who planned to have AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we hear in John's pre-birth planning session is he and the soul who will eventually become his lover and give him the AIDS virus are talking about how the world needs greater tolerance. And they say to each other, let's plan this experience to teach our elders a substantive lesson in tolerance. So this is really tremendously important because, you know, AIDS is something that is very shame-based in our society, and many people have judgments about it. And I would say to your listeners, here's an example, this gentleman, John Elmore, who not only does he not deserve our condemnation or our judgment, but we should actually be thanking him for having the raw courage to take on this mission because he agreed to experience AIDS to teach all the rest of us a lesson in tolerance. So service to others would be a third reason for planning life challenges. And then the fourth reason I found in my research for Courageous Souls, and this is really the big one, is that it leads to a more profound self-knowing. And what I mean is this. When we are in spirit, we are really in a realm that is very much as it's classically portrayed. It's a realm of great peace and joy and love and light. But in such a realm, we experience no contrast to ourselves. And because we experience no contrast to ourselves, we cannot fully know or appreciate or understand ourselves. Now, what I found in my research is that we as souls are love. And by that I mean not only that we are loving, although certainly I believe that to be true, I mean that we are made quite literally from the energy of love. But since we've experienced no contrast to ourselves, we can't fully know ourselves as love, and so we plan incarnations here on the physical plane in a realm of contrast, a realm of duality. In other words, up, down, left, right, hot, cold, and good, bad. So here in this realm of duality, we experience great contrast to love, and if we can choose in those challenging circumstances to express love and receive love, which is really, I think, the ultimate goal of an incarnation, then we develop a more self, a more profound knowing of ourselves as love. When the lifetime is over, we carry that more profound self-knowing back into spirit with us, and it becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity. So the suffering that we experience to develop this greater self-knowing from the soul's perspective is really quite brief, quite transitory. And we can't be harmed in any way permanently by what we experience here. But this deeper self-knowing of ourselves as love, this becomes part of our souls for all eternity. And so from the soul's perspective, the life challenges are a very worthwhile experience.
Wow. That's quite a bit of information there. You know, it's funny because you were talking about the service to others. And I know for myself, I'm a gay male, and I also have AIDS. I've had it for 24 years. And so I've been able to see firsthand, you know, and have people die in my arms. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that that is the lesson indeed, that we are here to, the part of that those deaths is to learn compassion and love and non-judgment. Are there ever cases when people... This is something that I think people will be interested in. Is everything scripted, so to speak, or are there instances where there was a random element thrown in that was not part of the pre-planning?
We always have free will, so we can deviate from the pre-birth plan anytime we like. And there are sometimes things that happen that are not part of the pre-birth plan. I have a good example of that in the book. And again, I come back to the chapter on deafness and blindness. There's a story in there of a gentleman, Bob Feinstein, who did not plan to be born blind, but he was born prematurely, and when he was placed in the incubator, the nurse at the hospital made an error. She put too much oxygen into the incubator, and the excess oxygen damaged the cells in the retinas of his eyes, leaving him completely blind. Now, this was not part of his pre-birth plan, and when it happened, his spirit guides were there right next to the incubator, and when he came out of the infant body, they took him back into spirit to the place where he planned his life, and they showed him what was happening. They actually showed him the baby's eyes, and they said, you will be completely blind because your retinas have been damaged by too much elemental oxygen. You have two choices. You can either take on this new challenge, or you can end the incarnation, come back here, and plan a new life.
Uh-huh.
Now, he had had several previous incarnations in which he had experienced a lot of solitude. For example, he'd been a monk in Spain, I believe it was.
Uh-huh.
So he was accustomed to things that would separate him from other people. And
yes.
So he looked at the blindness as just one more thing that would cause some solitude. And he thought, I can deal with this, and I will learn from it, and I'll make use of it. So
uh-huh.
he told his guides, I accept this new challenge. I want to continue with the incarnation. He returned to the baby's body, and now he's, he was born completely blind. But it was something that he decided actually after birth to take on. It wasn't part of the pre-birth plan.
Wow. That was another interesting thing that I really enjoyed reading about, was how you described, or how the mediums describe, the planning room. Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, what it looks like, the various board or the diagrams?
Well, what Stacy Wells sees in these pre-birth planning sessions is a couple of things. She sees a board that looks to her very much like a chessboard or a checkerboard.
Uh-huh.
And the spirit guides and the souls who are planning their lives move what you might call pieces around on this board. It's the pieces represent the places where they will live and the people who will be part of their lives.
Mm.
And it's sort of an organizational tool for planning the upcoming life.
Mm.
She also sees something that looks very much like a flow chart. In other words, it's a series of if-then scenarios.
Yeah.
And it's used to map out the upcoming lifetime. So, for example, the soul will come to a critical point at, say, age 10.
Uh-huh.
And if the incarnate personality, using its free will, makes a certain choice, then the flowchart goes off in one direction. If the incarnate personality makes another choice, then it branches off into a completely different direction.
Okay.
And there are many, many, many of these if-then points in
yeah.
the flowchart. So the planning is really tremendously complex and detailed. Really, I think in many respects it's beyond the capacity of the human brain to understand.
Yeah.
But when we're back in spirit, we're not limited by a physical brain, and so the planning is really extraordinarily complex.
Yes, and the other thing I remember too is that there were often one of the mediums saw several of the people that would be involved with the person's incoming life plan that would be there to talk about the various elements, and would they agree to that? Is that correct?
Yes, all of the major players who are going to be in the person's life are there. The future parents, the children, spouses, friends, all of the people who are going to play significant roles come in, and they talk about what they want to experience together, and they agree to play certain roles for each other. So to come back to John Elmore, the homosexual man, for example,
mm-hmm.
Stacy saw and heard the conversation with his future homosexual lover, in which they talk about this person giving AIDS to him,
mm.
and they talk about the need for greater tolerance at this time in history.
Mm.
John's parents also show up there, and it's very interesting what he plans with them. He apparently had a number of previous incarnations in which people had said shaming words to him,
uh-huh.
and he had believed what he had been told about himself.
Oh.
So when he reviewed those lifetimes, he thought, I want to have another incarnation in which I take on this challenge of people shaming me,
uh-huh.
and this will be another reason I choose AIDS. And so he asked his parents, he actually asked them, will you say shaming things to me about AIDS and about other things as well? And this will give me the opportunity to overcome that, not believe the shaming words, and while I'm incarnate, come into a realization of who I really am, which was something he had not been able to do in previous lifetimes.
Wow.
So we see his future lover, we see his parents, and this is the case with every person that we work with. All of the major players in the upcoming lifetime are there as part of the planning process.
Wow, that's amazing. So it helps to explain, you know, why, you know, when negative things happen, that those can be or probably are part of what we came here to work through.
Yes, that's very much the case. Let me also just say for your listeners, if they feel that the book is of interest or service to them, there is a website where they can find it. It's www.courageoussouls.com, And as you said, there's a free sample on the About the Book page where they can get a good sense of what the book is all about.
Right, and I encourage everybody to read that because it's a wonderful book. It's really wonderful, and I highly recommend it. You know, it's one of those life-altering kinds of books. So do you feel that you could, at this point, even though the research is limited to, a handful of people, do you feel that this is pretty much, what do the mediums tell you? Is this pretty much how it operates for all of us?
Well, there are only 10 people in the book, but remember, we did dozens and dozens of sessions with people. And I'm actually working on book 2 in the Courageous Souls series now.
Oh, good.
Which will be similar to book 1, but it will focus on a different set of life challenges.
Uh-huh.
So to answer your question, we did find very much the same planning process with every single person we worked with. They were choosing different challenges, of course, and they were making these plans with different souls. But it was what Stacy saw was always in the same rooms, in the same building. People's spirit guides were there. Another theme that she saw that was similar across planning sessions was that frequently the spirit guides would step back and let souls plan their own lives, and they would just come forward from sort of an ante room when they were called upon for their advice. But they let souls plan their own lives very much. So there were these themes that we saw across planning sessions.
Wow. Did anybody talk about, for instance, a higher power or, anything beyond the higher self or the soul?
Well, I in one of the channeling sessions, and this was in the chapter on death of a loved one, medium Corby Mitley, who is the medium who can channel someone's higher self, I was interviewing the soul of a woman named Valerie who had planned before she was born to lose two loved ones. She lost a fiancé actually about 48 hours after they got engaged, and she also lost her only child, Dustin, in his teens to an seemingly accidental drug overdose.
Mm.
So through Corby, I was able to interview Valerie's soul, and I asked about the planning of these two seemingly premature deaths. And we were told that both of these souls did want short lifetimes for purposes of their own, and that Valerie agreed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked Valerie's soul, when you're planning things like this, when you're planning a lifetime, do you plan with a higher power? In other words, do ascended masters come in,
and
do they help you with your planning? And Valerie's soul said, yes, we do get input or planning advice from ascended masters, but they are of a finer vibration, and we aspire to raise ourselves to that finer vibration. So the ascended masters don't plan point for point or step by step, because if they did that for us, then how would we raise our vibration, and how would we learn?
Yes, yeah, that makes very good sense. So that, from what I understand, this also validates one of the things that I believe is the way it works, that we do have prior incarnations. Does a person's previous lifetime occasionally bleed through into this one?
Well, what do you mean by bleed through?
In other words, supposedly we come in under the veil and we don't remember anything, but are there ever disturbing events from the past that affect this particular incarnation, like maybe a quick death or a car accident or something like that?
Well, very often the effect of past lives is on a subconscious or unconscious level. For example, Penelope, who I spoke about earlier, she has no conscious memory of having heard her mother be murdered in a previous lifetime because it would be too traumatic. So the healing is occurring at a subconscious level.
Okay.
There's another story in the book, in the chapter on the pre-birth planning of drug addiction and alcoholism, the story of Pat, who is now in his 70s, and he experienced alcoholism for several decades in this lifetime. And when we went into Pat's pre-birth planning session, we learned that he had a previous life in which he had been a soldier, he had been in battle, and he had been the last survivor in his troop of soldiers, and Stacy saw an image of Pat wandering through this battlefield with all these fallen soldiers around him, And apparently when he died shortly after that, and there was a carry-through in which fear from being a soldier in this battlefield carried over with him into spirit. And so when he planned this incarnation, he wanted to heal the fear, much in the same way that Penelope wanted to heal the trauma of having heard her mother be murdered.
Uh-huh.
And Pat felt that alcoholism would serve this. And it's really quite ingenious what he did, because the fear, which is largely on a subconscious level, motivated him to drink. And the alcoholism motivated him to seek out God and reestablish his spirituality, which would then heal the fear that caused the alcoholism in the first place.
Wow.
So he comes full circle in this lifetime. And
wow.
In fact, that's exactly what he did when he was in his, I think in his 60s, he had a night at home alone where he fell literally to his knees and called out to God for help. And it was at that time that his life started to turn around. So he was motivated to reestablish his spirituality by the complete lack of a connection with God that he experienced earlier in life through the alcoholism.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. Do we ever graduate from these levels?
We do. And in fact, what I found in my research for Courageous Souls is that many people are actually on their last lifetime in the physical dimension. So many people, in order to graduate, so to speak, they've packed their lives quite full because there's a great deal of karma that needs to be balanced before we can move on. So you have many people who are alive now who have great, great challenges in their lives, and they often feel, you know, when will it end and how much do I have to take on in this lifetime?
Yep.
But the reason that lives are packed so full now is that we are, in many cases, graduating.
Did you ever get intimations of what's coming for humanity in general as a whole, according to much of this? I know you've done a lot of research on spirituality and stuff, and there's a common underlying theme that the vibration of Earth is raising by around 2012. Did that ever pop up?
I don't write about it in the book, but I certainly did ask about it.
Uh-huh.
And what I was told, because I asked about it a number of different times, I would ask, are we going through an ascension process? And the answer was yes. But the date kept changing. So, you know, at one session it would be 2010, and then it might be 2016, and then it might be 2012. And when I asked why is the date different, each time I asked the question, the response from Spirit was that it depends on the collective consciousness, the collective vibration of humanity, which is constantly changing. So every time you ask the question, the date is a little bit different.
Right. That's what I thought. Were you ever able to find out what that process might be like, or are they pretty close-lipped about it?
I really could not get a very good description of that. And I think in many respects it would really be beyond our understanding at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right. But that doesn't keep us from wanting to know the details. In regards to the higher self, how does that differ from the soul? Is it like is it like a general manager of all the incarnations, or what did you find out about the higher self?
Well, I use the term higher self as synonymous with soul. Now, I know not everybody does that.
Okay.
But my understanding of the soul or the higher self is that it's a collection of every lifetime, every incarnation that has ever been.
Okay.
So when we pass out of this lifetime, we have an eternal core that reunites with the soul, and we also have temporary personality traits that we took on just for this incarnation, which do not go with us. Now, I should also add, when I talk about our eternal core reuniting with the soul, that's in terms of our perception. But in fact, we're never actually separate from our souls. It just seems that way because we're limited to what we can perceive with the five senses.
Yeah.
So we would perceive ourselves reuniting with the soul, but really, there is no separation.
Wow, that's pretty awesome information too. So our feeling separate is merely a subjective feeling that is not real at all, and it's not the way it is.
That's correct. The truth of the matter, as I understand it, is that there's really only one being in existence in the universe, and that being is you and me and every person here on Earth and every other being everywhere. we're all one. And I think many of your listeners are probably familiar with the concept of oneness.
Yeah.
But when we come here to Earth for a physical incarnation, we intentionally block our perception of oneness, and so we confine our consciousness to that of a physical body. We perceive ourselves as being separate from everyone else, but in fact that's really not the case. And when we return to spirit after an incarnation, we perceive once again that we are one with every other being in the universe. And yet, even though we perceive that oneness, we also have a sense of ourselves as individuals at the same time.
Wow.
Now, this is a paradoxical concept to the human brain.
Yeah.
But if we were back in spirit, it wouldn't be a paradox. It would be the reality that we'd be living.
Wow. Wow. That's kind of how I thought it was. That's awesome. So all the differences and the troubles and the strife and everything that's going on is really, for the most part, self-created. Either for the lessons of for our own lessons and for the lessons of each other.
Yes, what we're doing here on Earth is very much akin to actors on a stage.
Yeah,
and we have pre-scripted roles which we can deviate from
right.
at any point using our free will.
Right.
And our guides and the angels, it's as though they're seated in the audience watching us.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's so funny, you know. It's just kind of natural progression of, you know, it just seems logical that that's how it would be. Did you ever run across anything that indicated that there was some kind of evil or darkness or entity that was not in the best interest of, that was not love, or is everything love?
Well, that's something that I'm still researching, and I think that will probably be covered in Book 3 in the Courage of Soul series. But the one thing that I will say about that, and I'll come back to Penelope's story again to illustrate this point.
Yeah.
When we went into her pre-birth planning session, the soul who murdered her mother in the previous lifetime was there. And very on in that planning session, he stands up and he says, I will not incarnate when you and your mother go back for your lifetimes. Now, the reason he does this is that he believes that Penelope and her mother would be best served by him not being in body at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting about this is that in the previous life, this person was a murderer. He's somebody that we would condemn and say, this person is bad, this
right.
person should be punished.
Right.
But here on the soul level, he is just as loving and compassionate and service-oriented as any other soul, and he actually agrees to defer his own learning in his next incarnation
wow.
because he wants to be of service to Penelope and her mother.
Wow.
So very often, people who we would condemn as bad or evil, these are just the roles they're playing in a particular lifetime, and
yeah.
when they get back into spirit, they're just as loving as anyone else.
Wow. That's an important lesson to ponder for everybody. It kind of handles the whole idea of our judging each other, that there's really no point in it. It's kind of useless to judge because we really don't know. You don't sense any, there's no sense of judgment from the other side, is there?
No, there really is not. It's the personality, it's us who are incarnate, who
uh-huh.
judge. We label everything as good or bad.
Yeah.
But from the perspective of the soul and from the perspective of our guides, the things that we're calling good and bad, it's all just experience, and there's no judgment associated with it.
Right. That's exactly what I thought. One thing that I was also considering is that we incarnate with souls that we often incarnate with in previous lives. Did you find that as well, that soul groupings that shift around, like in one lifetime maybe your mother is your brother and your sister is your son, and so on and so forth?
Yes, that's very common. We tend to reincarnate and plan our lives with members of our soul group, which is a collection of other souls who are at more or less the same stage of evolution.
Uh-huh.
And we know these other souls well. We feel great love for them, and
uh-huh.
they feel great love for us because we've shared so much with each other. So we will play all kinds of different roles for each other. And as you were saying, we'll... One case, we'll be the parent, and then we'll be the child.
Yeah.
We'll be the brother, and then we'll be the sister. The mother, and then the father. The murderer, and the one who is murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're constantly playing these different roles for other members of our soul group.
Wow. That is amazing. Is it pretty accurate to say, according to the the various channels that you contacted, that we do have angels and guides working with us at all times, that their help continues in this realm?
That is true. As I understand it, we all have spirit guides. We have angels who are looking out for us. I did not see any exceptions to that.
Good, good. Because, you know, I was curious to find out if, you know, all the it seems silly to have all that pre-planning and have the angels and guides and so on and so forth there, and then to not have assistance while we're here in living those plans and bringing them about and being guided into the direction that we would want to go in.
So I think each one of us has an entourage that is much bigger than we ever realized.
Yeah.
And that team is there to help and guide us at all times.
And as you said, we can deviate from the original plan. How far can that deviation occur? I mean, can somebody actually dawdle away their life and not accomplish anything that they had on their flowchart?
I think that's very possible. Now, one thing that can happen in that situation is that if the soul feels that nothing much is being gained from the incarnation because the person is so far off the plan, the soul can choose to withdraw its energy from the physical body and bring about an end to the lifetime.
Uh-huh.
So that does happen in some cases, but what is much more common is that if somebody were far off the plan, their guides would be whispering in their ear, so to speak, trying to get them back on the path.
Yeah.
And they would feel, if they were open to it, they would feel certain intuitive promptings or impulses to do certain things and not do other certain things.
Yeah.
And if the person listens to those intuitive impulses, that will get them back on the path.
Yeah, yeah. I've often thought in my own life that, you know, that when I stray a little bit too far from where I'm supposed to be, that I receive some kind of a major shock or, you know, an awakening that kind of makes me reevaluate where I'm going.
Well, a lot of people describe that as being hit over the head by a cosmic 2x4.
Yeah.
And that's what the universe will do sometimes if we need it to get back on the path.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the most amazing discoveries for you personally? What were some of the revelations that came out for you in doing this book?
Well, I think one of the most amazing things, and I mentioned it earlier, is the idea that we are love. As eternal souls, we are made of the energy of love. And I was constantly amazed at how loving the souls were in the pre-birth planning sessions, how they were oriented towards serving each
uh-huh.
other. The sort of egotistical or selfish motivations that you so often see here on
uh-huh.
the physical plane really were not present, and souls were just oriented toward loving each other, expressing compassion for each other, and being of service to each other.
And I'm sure glad you said that, because it's very reassuring. What was I going to ask you? Let's see here. In choosing these, I know you kind of, quote, accidentally, unquote, bumped into these various channels and so on and so forth, but how do you go about verifying that they're accurate or that they're the real thing?
Well, I've had multiple personal sessions with each one of them.
Uh-huh.
And in those sessions, they did know things about me that they could not have known if they didn't have true psychic abilities. And the other confirmation came from the various people that I interviewed and that we worked with in these sessions, because they would always say afterwards that the mediums and the channels knew things about them that they really could not have known if their abilities weren't legitimate.
Uh-huh. And I know you also include the list of people that you work with, which is extensively noted in the book, so that people can contact them if they want to. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is an appendix in the book that has all the contact information for the mediums, and that same information is on the links page on the website, and I'll just give that URL once again.
Yes, please do.
It's www.courageoussouls.com. And again, on the links page, I have the names and the contact information for all the mediums and channels who I work with.
What was the most moving story for you? What moved? Which one of these stories, soul stories, moved you the most?
Well, I think Valerie's story in the Death of a Loved One chapter is very touching, because, you know, here we have a mother lost her only child when he was in his teens, and then she lost her fiancé 48 hours after they became engaged. It's really a very, very touching story. And there's a part of the story that always made me cry, actually, when I was writing it, and that is that after Valerie lost her son, I should back up. Before Valerie lost her son, Dustin, there was an evening where the two of them were home alone, and it was raining outside. Valerie was sitting on the sofa in her living room watching the raindrops come down the window pane, and Dustin, her son, came into the room, and he turned a lamp on. And Valerie said, no, Dust, turn the lamp off. I like natural light. Natural light is good. So he turned the lamp off, and then he sat down next to his mother on the sofa, and they just sat there quietly enjoying each other's company while the raindrops ran down the window pane. Well, after Dustin passed away, just within a day or two of the funeral, he came to Valerie's sister, who has some psychic abilities, and he said to Valerie's sister, "Tell my mom I'm okay. Tell my mom I'm natural light." So the next day, Valerie's sister came to her, and she said, "Valerie, Dustin came to me yesterday, and I have no idea what this means, but he said, tell you that he's natural light." And wow. So this was confirmation for Valerie that Dustin was still alive and that he was fine.
Wow.
And I just find that to be very, very moving, and I actually shed some tears when I was writing that up.
Wow, that's beautiful. Wow. Did you notice that any of the folks that you interviewed had visitations from the other side or communications?
Some of them do. For example, in the chapter on physical accidents, I tell the story of Christina, who is in her 50s now, but when she was in her 20s, she was working as an administrative assistant at Pomona College in Southern California, and she went to her employer's mailbox in the basement of one of the buildings there to retrieve the mail. Well, there was a pipe bomb in the mailbox.
Oh, my.
And when she reached in to get the mail, the bomb exploded, and it hurled her 10 feet backwards against a concrete wall. Her face was scorched. A lot of her body was scorched. And she had to have, about 10 different surgeries in the months to come in order to heal herself. Now, this was something that she planned before she was born. She actually sat down with the bomber and talked about how she wanted to be the victim, quote-unquote victim, in his in the bomb explosion.
Wow.
The reason that she wanted to do this was to heal herself,
uh-huh.
because she wanted to be a healer in this lifetime, and she wanted to take the skills she would develop through self-healing and then turn them outward and express them as love and compassion for all the patients she would go
wow.
on to heal.
Wow.
Now, to answer the question you asked, Christina has clairaudient abilities, and she was able to talk to her spirit guide, Cassandra, throughout this healing process and still talks with her frequently. And, in fact, I actually interview Cassandra in the book,
uh-huh.
and Cassandra tells us a little bit about the pre-birth plan. Christina also works with Archangel Michael.
Oh.
And he's not interviewed in the book, but she, through her psychic abilities, she talks with Archangel Michael about the healing work that she does in the world.
Uh-huh.
And so this is a good example of somebody in the book who does have these psychic abilities.
Wow. You bring up an interesting point. Did the archangels ever come up in these interviews? And what about the Jesus Christ consciousness?
The archangels did not appear in any of the pre-birth planning sessions. And
okay.
I could not tell you why that is.
Okay.
As far as Jesus is concerned, some of your listeners will be familiar with the name Sananda.
Right, right.
As I understand it, Sananda is the name for the soul who had an incarnation as Jesus.
Okay.
Sananda's not in the book, but one of the channels I work with, Mary Lou Wilson Pena, who's in Florida, she channels Sananda.
Ah.
And when I needed to understand something about pre-birth planning, if I had questions, I would work with Mary Lou, and she would channel Sananda, and he would answer these questions for me.
Wow. Well, that's a handy thing to be able to do, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I guess then you got a lot of guidance for, and you must have discovered that this book was all part of your, pre-planning, and that it was, basically you were destined to do this book.
Well, as a matter of fact, I had my own session with Stacy Wells, and we went into my pre-birth planning session, and she saw the souls who I was agreeing to write the book for.
Oh, really?
Yes, and they were coming up to me one by one, and they were saying, they were telling me about where they would be in their lives when they found the book and how it would help them to awaken spiritually and see deeper purpose in their life plans and in the challenges that they were facing. So apparently, from what she saw, there were many, many souls that I was talking with about writing the books. I didn't put any of this information in the book because, to be honest with you, I thought that it might be viewed as self-aggrandizing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to create that impression, but I am very much aware that this is my pre-birth plan.
Well, you answered one of my questions off the record that I've been wondering about, and we won't go into that. Is there a common theme that you see between all of these lifetimes? I mean, a common compassionate thread or the thread of love?
The common theme really is love, mm-hmm. but it's a two-pronged theme. It's not only giving love, it's also receiving love. And this is very, very important from the soul's perspective, that we be able to allow others to love us. And one of the things I found in my research for Courageous Souls is that if someone has difficulty allowing other people to love them, when they review their lives, they will feel that they missed opportunities to receive love. And in some cases, they actually plan incarnations in which they're physically handicapped, for example, confined to a wheelchair, so that they quite literally cannot run away from people who are trying to love them.
I see. You know, I do healing work, pro bono healing work with a small group, and I'm sometimes amazed to see the lengths that people will go to, you know, to cure cancer. For instance, they'll just go through one radiation therapy after another and, you know, just be at death's door and still be subjecting their bodies. And I've always wondered why there's such an intense desire to cling to life, but I guess it would make sense if that was something that they were learning on the soul level, you know, if subjecting themselves to, you know, medical procedures that were invasive, for instance, might have some kind of a benefit on the soul level.
Well, one of the things that is at play in many of those situations is that the lessons are more for the loved ones and the family than for the person who's going through the treatment, because it gives the family and the loved ones an opportunity to express love and compassion for the person who is ill.
Yeah.
So that's not to say that the person who has cancer isn't learning and growing as well, but frequently it's about the other people too.
One thing I've been curious about, and I don't know if you ran across this through the channels, but I've read and I've had direct experiences with the idea that angels sometimes incarnate to enact certain roles that will create a certain effect. Did you run across any of that?
I don't have any stories in the book about that, but there was an instance, one case in which I came across a child who had been born with very, very severe handicaps.
Uh-huh.
And when we inquired about why this had been planned, we were told this is an incarnate angel, a being of great wisdom and love and a very high vibration, who took on these handicaps for the benefit of the family members who wanted to learn how to express unconditional love.
Wow.
Now, that story is not in the book, but that was the one instance I heard about in which an angel took physical form.
Wow, that's beautiful. Is there anything else that's not in the book that you could share with us?
I can give you a little preview of book two in the Whole series.
Yeah, please.
I haven't decided definitively which stories will be in the book, but some of the things that I've looked at, a woman who planned before birth to be adopted, so there may be a chapter on adoption.
Oh, yeah.
There will be something, I think, about abusive relationships, probably abusive romantic relationships, and also between parent and child.
Yeah, yeah.
I may look at the pre-birth planning of either poverty or financial reversal.
Mm-hmm.
So those will be some of the things that may be coming up in book two in the Courageous Soul series.
How can we wrap our heads around all of the, you know, the disturbing situations that are on the earth? I mean, in some countries, there are just children that are, you know, literally dying from starvation and disease, and I mean by the thousands. And you know, do those souls choose that as well, or you know, it seems likely that that serves some kind of purpose as well.
That's not something that I've explored in great detail, but my understanding is that, and this comes from the Michael system. Michael is a group consciousness, and there are several Michael channels around the world, including in this country. And what Michael says about that is that very often where a soul incarnates and the circumstances depend upon soul age, with younger souls being interested in experiencing lessons in physical survival. So you have, according to Michael, younger souls incarnating in these very dire circumstances, and then as they get older, they become more interested in learning emotional sorts of lessons, and they move away from the physical challenges.
Yeah, I like the Michael system. It's one of the most practical guides that, you know, and it incorporates some of the Gurdjieff material as well. What was one of the more shocking things that you found out as in this process of interviews?
I'm not sure that anything completely shocked me. By the time I got to the interviewing stage, I had done so much background study and preparation that I think I had a good sense of what was coming up.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to talk through the mediums and the trance channels?
Well, it's really a fascinating process. You know, for your listeners who haven't worked with the trance channel, what happens is that the consciousness of the channel steps aside, so to speak, and then another consciousness can speak directly through the physical body. Now, in some cases, the channel is completely aware of what's happening. In some cases, they're just somewhat aware, and in some cases, they have no awareness at all. Now, when I was researching Courageous Souls, the trance channel I worked with is Glenna Dietrich, and Glenna had no awareness at all of what was being said through her. So at the end of the sessions, when her consciousness would return, she would always ask us, how did it go and what did you talk about? Because she really had no recall of it at all.
Yeah. Interesting. Can you share a little bit about the chapter on drug addiction and alcoholism, one of the people that you interviewed with through that, since that's a subject near and dear to my heart?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The story on drug addiction, we talk about Sharon Dubinsky and her son, Tony, who had a heroin addiction.
Oh, yeah.
And they planned together. They planned his heroin addiction before either one of them was born, but for very different reasons. In Tony's case, he had had a number of previous incarnations in which he engaged in magical sorts of things, like being a shaman. And he wanted an experience where he would experience sort of magical effects through the use of drugs, and it would remind him of these previous incarnations in which he practiced magic. And he also wanted to learn self-love, and so he chose Sharon as his mother because she's a highly evolved soul, and he knew that he would eventually come to see himself through her eyes and learn to love himself the way that she loves him unconditionally.
Wow.
Now, in her case, she planned this partly because she loves Tony as a soul and wanted to give him the experiences he wanted. But also, she has had a pre-birth plan in which she would go on to form an organization that would be of great service to humanity. Sharon is a nurse, and she has worked with in pediatrics and with extensively with women who have had drug addictions. And she went on to form an organization called MOM, Mothers on Methadone, which is an organization that helps wean pregnant women off heroin and onto methadone so that they can eventually go on to have healthier babies. Well, her motivation for doing this was that she saw how methadone helped her son Tony leave his heroin addiction behind. And so this was all part of a very elaborate plan. She wanted to form this organization, Mothers on Methadone, as a form of service to humanity. And it was the impetus for that was the suffering that she saw Tony go through, and then the relief that he eventually experienced as he was weaned off of heroin and onto methadone.
Wow, that's awesome. Do you think, or did you run across anyone that where the parent didn't get consent, or where there was no knowledge of the mother that was going to have the child, or it seems that there would almost always have to be some kind of pre-birth agreement to incarnate? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I did not see any exceptions to that. In each and every case, there was mutual consent. The parents were choosing the children, and the children were choosing the parents.
Right.
What I found there, you asked me earlier, actually, what shocked me. I wouldn't say that this shocked me, but something that surprised me about parent-child pre-birth planning is that very often, you know, the children are chosen to be the teachers of the parents. And from the level of the personality, we think that just the opposite is going on. We think that parents are the teachers of their children. But from the soul level perspective, very often the souls who were agreeing to be parents and children, the parents were choosing children who they knew would be their teachers once they were a little bit older.
Wow. Well, I know that there are a lot of indigos and crystals and special kids that are being born today, so it does seem like something is, they seem to be more in touch with the other side. Did you run across any of that as well?
No, I did not research that. I'm very much aware that the children are being born today who have great psychic gifts, but that was not part of my research.
What is something that you would like to share with the listeners to something that you feel is important to convey from your research?
Well, one of the things that I'm trying to accomplish by writing Courageous Souls is to help people make a shift in the way that they define themselves. In other words, to move from thinking of themselves as the body or as the personality and to begin thinking of themselves as a divine, eternal soul. I think very often we define ourselves in terms of our perceived faults or our perceived limitations. And I would say to your listeners that that's not who you are, really. Who you are, really, is a divine, eternal soul who took physical form very temporarily, very briefly, so that you could have certain experiences. But for us to define ourselves in terms of our limitations or faults, that's really just an illusion. We are ultimately eternal souls.
Wow. Before we end the show, as we're going to be running out of time in a minute, would you just refresh our memories on how to get a hold of your website and so on and so forth?
Sure. The name of the book is Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? And it can be ordered at www.courageoussouls.com. People can also order by phone by calling 1-800-742-0148. And it's also available through local bookstores and through your local libraries.
Well, I haven't quite finished the book yet, but it's a wonderful book, and I mean it's an eye opener, and it's well written, and they're riveting stories, and it really opens your eyes to these other realms, and helps me to make a shift in how I see myself. And I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And I hope that I wish you the best of luck on the second book, and I'd like to have you back to talk about that one, too.
Thank you. I'd enjoy that.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Well, thanks again, Robert. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And remember, you're not your body. You're a soul. Good night, everybody.